Welcome to Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew.
So how's it going, Drew?
It's going pretty good. How's it going, James?
Pretty good. We have a busy week coming up, actually.
Yeah, we really do. It's going to be pretty awesome.
Meetups around town. So yeah, I actually went to the Code and Coffee last week, which is pretty cool. There was a presentation on Internet of Things.
Oh, yeah? How did that go?
Pretty sweet. Actually, I didn't know. There's this framework called, or this module for Node called Johnny 5. Yeah.
What's that about?
It's like a robotics thing.
Like short
lets you control stuff. Yeah, you can like, that. Actually, there's pictures of the robot there. But,
nice.
You can actually write JavaScript for like your IoT devices, for like your Arduinos and your Spark funds and all this other stuff. I didn't even know that existed. I thought you had to use the Arduino IDE for all that stuff. But it turns out you can use JavaScript to program robots. Which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. So there was a guy doing a presentation about that. And the other one that the guy did was this module called MySAM.
Was that the same guy?
No, they were different guys.
Oh, okay.
So MySAM is a, I guess.
Yeah, it actually looks really cool. You can check it out. There's a GitHub repo. We'll have it posted.
Just MySAM, MySAM.
Yeah, so the guy who developed it, I think his name is David, we're actually going to have him on the show in a couple of weeks, so that should be pretty cool. But he posted something in the YVR Dev Slack general channel, and he posted a link to it. So I checked it out, and thought that looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, he did a demo of it. So what MySAM is, it's a machine learning neural network sort of program, but you can feed it your voice.
Yeah.
So people that don't know, in WebKit browsers or in the HTML spec, there's going to be a browser or a speech recognition API. So you can actually talk to your browser and have it do stuff for you.
Right.
So it's in Chrome right now. So you can actually talk to Chrome. Like when you do Chrome search, you can actually click a little icon and say what you were looking for, and it'll figure out what you said. So you can actually use that in your apps. So this guy's made this sort of wraparound for it.
Does it only work in Chrome right now?
I'm not sure.
That's interesting,
he was using
Chromium.
I
happened to check it out in Chrome.
He was using Chromium.
Right.
So I'm sure it does. So maybe if it's not in stable, it's probably in dev or beta.
Right, but I mean, does it work in other browsers? Not yet.
I don't think so.
I wonder if there's support for that in
Firefox. I don't think it works in Firefox because it had
Safari.
WebKit prefix.
Or what's that other one? Internet Explorer?
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard of that. Is that still a thing?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, you could talk to your computer, and it would actually, like, give you information back. So you could actually program it to say, like, what's the weather in Vancouver? And it would show you the weather back.
That's pretty cool.
So you can make a task for showing you the weather. And the other thing is that you can actually train it yourself. Mm-hmm. So you can speak to it and say, what do you say? Add a task to my to-do list. And the thing said, like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he said, oh, I meant, let me tell you what I mean. And he can actually choose what the task is to assign. And he can actually click on the words and assign those to what he actually meant. Then
that's
when he
pretty
says
cool.
Then,
and it's all open source, and you can contribute to it. What's the framework like?
Well, it's Node, so it's all Node-y. I think I don't know if he's using any front-end thing or whatever, but I only looked at it briefly, and I saw the demo, obviously, but it was like really sweet. It's pretty cool. You can talk to your
that's
browser, tell
cool.
it to do stuff.
So that was at Code and Coffee?
Yeah.
Nice. I'll definitely have to check that meetup out. I feel a little bit like a procrastinator for not having gone after you keep telling me it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so it's sweet.
Definitely sounds great.
Yeah. So, upcoming this week, there are lots of stuff. So I'll start with one of the Code Core events. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the Code Core event week that we're going to be entering into.
Oh, yeah, sure. So that's it's something that happens every couple of months during a boot camp. They'll have an events week at Code Core where they invite people in for lunch and learns Monday through Friday, so 5 days of the week. This week we're going to have five events, obviously. So you can check them out. They're posted on events.codecore.ca or also on the what's the meetup called? Pixel Hackers?
Pixel Crafters.
Pixel Crafters. There you go. So you can see there's quite a few, yeah.
They have free food too, right?
I think there's going to be pizza and soft drinks.
Mm.
Yeah, it should be pretty fun. I think the one I'm looking forward to on Wednesday a lot is Designing It Better in Browser. Sam Jane. That looks pretty cool. And there's also one Mike Martinson. He's going to be giving a talk on building Rails apps with JSON API. So he's, I think he's working on microservices over at PaySavvy. And they seem to be doing some pretty cool stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that I'm looking at is the Monday one.
Mm-hmm.
So all these are they have one every day for the week. So from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday,
and it's at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, they're all at 12 noon. Mm-hmm. And they're all at the Code Core office, 142 West Hastings.
That's it.
Yes. And I've got the address memorized now.
Nice.
So, yeah, you can go and check those out, events.codecore.ca. So the one I'm looking at is the Eric Brooks Surviving Technical Interview. We talked about this last time about, you know, if you're an employee or you're looking to switch, you might want to brush up on your interview skills. If you're a business owner or someone that's going to conduct an interview, you might want to brush up on your interviewing skills.
Yeah, right. I think that'll be an interesting place to go and to see other people who are there, or an interesting talk to see. It's on Monday at noon, and it's a free lunch.
Yeah. The other one I was looking at was the Steve Godin has a spin-up desktop apps with Electron JS.
Yeah, that looks pretty cool, too.
So Electron.js is the framework behind the Atom editor by GitHub. Mm-hmm. People that use that know what that is.
So is that maintained by the GitHub team as well?
Yeah. It's also behind a bunch of other editors. There's one for Rust that uses it. Mm-hmm. There's actually a wrapper for NeoVim that uses Electron under the hood. And I think the new Visual Studio Code by Microsoft uses it, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it gets used a lot. And it's been used in a ton of apps. So it lets you use JavaScript, HTML, and CSS to create desktop applications, but not just for Mac. It's for Windows, Linux, and Mac as well. So you can actually package it up in a .app, a .exe, a DMG file, whatever your flavor of distro is, and throw it at your friend and have them install it for you.
Very cool. So that's coming up on, when is that? That's on Tuesday. At Code Core, 142 West Hastings, from 12 noon till 1, also a free lunch. And that would be a great intro, probably. I'm sure Steve, he's a great presenter and always, I think he's pretty big in the community.
Yeah, he's now a co-organizer of Code and Coffee.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Very cool. So that would be a great intro into Electron.js and getting up and running with spinning up desktop apps.
Yeah, you actually mentioned Sam's presentation, the Designing It Better in the Browser, and that one's on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday is the one you mentioned as well, the Building Rails Services with JSON API, but all the cool kids are going to be there on Friday because there's a presentation by Brent Vatney, React Native and Exponent JS.
Yeah, Brent's really awesome at presenting. He actually gave a cool presentation in the spring, I believe, on React at OpenDNS, and that was really successful. So he's been really going with React for a while, contributing to the source, and I think he's working with the Exponent JS team now.
Cool. Yeah, we're going to be talking probably a little bit more about React when we talk to Gabe.
Oh yeah,
because Gabe is a React junkie.
Is he?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely a JavaScript junkie.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Cool. Yeah, that'll be pretty awesome, and that's going to be Friday at noon. All of those events look really great, and I'll definitely be making an effort to avoid going out for lunch with other people on those days.
Yeah. Don't pack a lunch, kids. So, another event that's close to your heart, VanRuby Lightning Talks.
Yeah, the VanRuby Lightning Talks. That's going to be really awesome. That's this coming Tuesday, also at Code Core. There's a lot of
Code
Core's
going to be busy, eh?
Yeah, it really is. But the Lightning Talks are awesome. Usually beer and pizza, but really, really great presenters. And, of course, near and dear to my heart, as it is VanRuby.
And that's Tuesday, the 24th. But that one's at 6:30. So, you know, get a lunch and then maybe go for dinner at Code Core as well.
Yeah, pizza both times. I don't know.
Yeah.
And every day of the week, probably, too.
So if you're a fan of Thursday, you're going to have a lot of trouble because there's three events on Thursday and they're all pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Thursday is going to be a tough one for me because I really, really want to go to the one at OpenDNS. It's the Docker meetup. Mm-hmm. Looks really cool and about using Docker Compose, something we use every single day at work. And so I'm quite interested in seeing how that is. But that's at what time is it? At 6?
6 p.m.
6 p.m. At OpenDNS, which is over on Hastings. Is that 500?
675 West Hastings.
675 West Hastings on the fifth floor.
Yep.
And that, if you know the area, it's Hastings and Granville, the Royal Bank building.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a really cool office as well, so I really like that place. But just before that, what's happening?
The Mogo Technology Open House.
So this is, I think, hilarious. So we're there's a technology open house at Mogo, the company where I work.
Yes.
And I just found out about it this morning from James.
And that one's from 5 to 7:30. So right. You might be able to sneak in an hour. And then mm-hmm. Mogo's not too far from the DNS Open DNS office. So you might be able to jump in.
Right down the street.
You know, so hit two in one night.
Have some food, have some beer at the open house, go down to the Docker meetup, check out the presentation, head back up to Mogo, and finish out the night. Yeah, that might be a good way, but is there anything else happening on that Thursday?
Yeah, there is. So I have a tough decision because Startup Drinks, one of my favorite events, is on Thursday at 6 p.m., so I'm torn. I don't know where to go.
That's really interesting. So what kind of stuff happens at Startup Drinks?
So it's a little different than some of the other meetups. It's... Mm-hmm. They're not really anything that it's pitching. It's just mm-hmm. a lot of people, they have started a company and they want to talk to different people.
Yep.
But there are also people like myself who already have a company. I'm not starting anything. I'm just mm-hmm. there to chit chat with people because I work from home and it gets boring.
Yeah.
I go out there to meet people. I've met lawyers and accountants. If you're going, you're probably going to meet someone that might be looking to help new businesses. So that can be beneficial as well as like founders of new businesses. So you can sort of get the full range of services. So when I first started my company, Warpaint, we would go to Startup Drinks to try to like find clients. Mm-hmm. And that's how I basically started loving Startup Drinks, because I would just go there and it was really comfortable. I started organizing it and all this stuff back in the city I was in. So
So how did that help you find customers for Warpaint?
So like Warpaint is a media company. So we would find people that need design and branding, or like, we helped a couple of companies build their MVP. So that's where I got it. So then obviously for the companies, they found us. So it's kind of, you know, there's reciprocity there. It's not just me like leeching off of people and
trying to
get their money. It's startups that were looking for service. So it helped everyone. And I met all these organizers for different incubators and stuff that were in the city. Met a bunch of people that ended up working at one of the tech magazines in the city. So there was just so many people that I'd meet there.
So it's really just a place to, or not just, but it's really a place or a venue to share ideas and collaborate in and around the startup.
Yeah, absolutely. Base. Absolutely. So that one's great. At 6. So Mogo Tech Open House, 5 to 7:30. That's at 401 West Georgia, 2100, Suite 2100. Mm-hmm. Then there's a Docker meetup at 6, and that's the fifth floor of 675 West Hastings. And then a Startup Drinks, which is the 6 p.m., and that's at 131 Water Kitchen and Bar. So you could probably hit... I think you could hit
a couple of them, but not all three.
If
maybe.
You started at Mogo, you could hit Docker and then end up at Startup Drinks. That they're kind of in the same order from west to east.
Wow! Yeah. So that's a pretty long Thursday evening, and it might be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I might try and hit up all three.
That would be cool.
Yeah,
yeah. Then the last one, another one that at Mogo. Mogo is very popular in the last couple of weeks. So Hackernest.
You must be talking about Hackernest on Monday.
Hackernest.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I'm really happy that we're hosting Hackernest at Mogo, where I work. So I'll be able to show two things that I am very involved in, and that should be a lot of fun.
Hour of Code.
So Hour of Code, it's this global movement. I'm not sure if you've seen the videos. I think you can find it on hourofcode.com. You can also find it, I believe, at code.org, which I think is where I originally saw it. They have some pretty interesting videos. They have people from the guy who made Twitter, Dropbox.
Mm-hmm. I see a picture of Obama on their site.
Yeah. And Will.i.am, I think, as well, was pretty into code and learning to code and was in one of the videos that I saw. But it's really just a way to engage people and engage with people and help them to have access to understanding how code works. A lot of people who are developers are pretty excited about code and all the cool things you can do and how you can make computers do stuff and solve problems. And it's a mindset as well. And there's a lot of enthusiastic people who want to share their enthusiasm.
And these are like 1 hour tutorials that mm-hmm. happen all over the city. They're all over Vancouver. You don't need to have any experience to be there. That's geared towards, you know, people that are starting out, people that are, you know, just refreshing.
Well, I think in my case, a teacher reached out to me today, and it's a second grade class, so they're not going to be hardcore developers. Well, some of them might be.
Jason Tam last week. He saw the video, the Hour of Code video, and it inspired him to run out into the world and start coding.
That's right. Yeah, I'd forgotten all about that. Yeah. But definitely a chance to be an inspirational influence on the minds of youths.
Yeah. So you can mold some youths. I see that says here ages 4 to 104.
Yeah.
So as long as you're in that age range,
if you're 105, you're out of luck.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That I wish they'd really expand that. I don't know why there's limits.
If you want to see the Hour of Code Canada stuff, you can go to hourofcode.com/ca.
Sounds really good. And one other thing that I wanted to mention was bctechjobs.ca/events. It's a pretty cool place to go and see some of the events that are around town. Also a pretty good place to find or post a job in tech.
Those are all our events.
So we've got Gabe Schultz here. Gabe Schultz works at Brewhouse and is also the organizer of the Van Ruby meetup. Hi, Gabe.
Hi.
How's it going today?
It's going pretty well. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Vancouver or the Van Ruby meetup. If I want to go check it out, what should I expect? What should I bring?
Right. So we usually actually just recently canceled for the rest of the year, but we usually have
December coming up.
So yeah, exactly. Holidays. Exactly. Very busy. We usually have a weekly meetup where people can bring their laptop and just come and hack on Ruby projects. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I myself do not hack on Ruby projects when I go there. I 100% JavaScript these days, so so I haven't done Ruby in a while, but I still really like the weekly meetup because it kind of gives me an excuse to go in there and, like, if I had a side project that I wasn't working on or I stopped working on because, you know, mm-hmm. like once you drop it for a few days, it can become really hard to pick it up again.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So having that weekly meetup there was been really nice for me.
There's also a pretty cool community. It's got some regular players and it's got some people that come from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. You get a lot of people there because I guess Rails has become the, like, de facto boot camp teaching tool. So if you go to a boot camp, you're going to learn Rails like 95% of the time, right?
Well, speaking of boot camps, you're part of CodeCore, right?
Yeah. So right? I also TA at CodeCore boot camp. I've been doing that for probably about a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a lot of people who are just like learning mm-hmm. Ruby and learning Rails coming to those meetups. You do have quite a few regulars.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder whether
let me ask you this. As a developer, you're pretty involved in the community. I mean, you run the weekly Ruby meetup and mm-hmm. you're also TAing at a local boot camp. What's it like TAing? Would you recommend it to other people? I mean, we have 4 boot camps around town now and some people have
There's
their
4?
Afternoons free. There are, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. What it's like TAing, you have to be very patient, I guess, because you're dealing with, people who are very new and it can become very easy to forget about, what it was like to not know anything and not know any of the vocabulary as well.
Right.
Right. Because once you just start talking words at people, they immediately get thrown off and they get stressed out and you just confuse them even more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you have to be very patient in that way and understanding, empathetic to what they're struggling with. And it's really funny because I will, I guess, go in and they'll say, okay, I've been working on this for half an hour, 45 minutes. I can't figure out what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sort of, you're like, oh, well, you're missing missing a dot there.
Right.
And they're just, their entire world is shaken because they, like, I'm some kind of god to them. Right. But
it took them 2 seconds.
Exactly. Little do they know that, like, you know, that same question has been asked to me, you know, for the past every single cohort at least 15 times, you know. And obviously I work professionally doing Ruby,
yeah.
So I've seen all of those basic error messages.
So what you're saying is you make it look easy, it seems easy, because you've seen that time and time again.
Right, yeah.
You have a familiarity with it that they just don't.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's important also to emphasize that you know, I try to emphasize to them all of these things that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because I think like some people really like, this is thing that I call is like nerd flexing,
uh-huh.
where like...
nerd flexing.
Yeah. Yeah, where like someone will try to defeat another person in an argument by using vocabulary that the other person is not familiar with.
My father used to do that with me. Love it. Nerd flexing. I wish I could have called him out on that.
I call that nerd rage, but it's like the same thing.
It's sure. And I guess a lot of people will come in and try and teach newbies, you know, stuff about Ruby or Rails, and they use very complicated language, and they're not, yeah, they have.
So they're just nerd flexing.
It could be. It could be that they're nerd flexing, or that just they just don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah, right? I think that can be a detrimental teaching aspect of how they're trying to teach. They're saying, "Oh, just to instantiate this class." The person's like, "What the hell?"
Yeah,
like I'm in class right now. Like, mm-hmm. No, you need to say like things like move this file, rename this extension, like very simple terms people want to get there.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think that's part of teaching, not teaching properly.
Yeah. So I think a lot of programmers who before I've had a lot of people message me on Slack and ask me about TAing and they're interested in TAing and stuff like that. But I don't think a lot of people are cut out for it. I mean, like I used to be a high school teacher too, right?
Right.
I have a degree in education, and so you know I spent quite a bit of time studying, even teaching. For a semester, I taught a group of Math 9 students. And that was probably the most challenging thing because
Math 9, yeah.
Because they're Math 9. I minored in mathematics in university.
Right.
Right. And yeah, sure, they have the attitude. But that that aside, it's very.
Taking a step back.
You have to, take a step back and explain it in a way that they're going to understand.
Do you find that the teaching style didn't really change? Or is it actually different teaching, you know, school versus teaching like programming? Do you find there's a difference?
So, teaching at the boot camp, there's definitely less of an compulsory attitude from the students there, right? Like with Math 9, they have to take Math 9.
Yeah, I guess they have to be there.
They have to be there, and right. It's part, like, it's the law, you know, they have to be there, otherwise, what else?
The world is over.
Yeah.
The world is over.
Yeah.
So you've made it sound like it's quite a challenging thing and a lot of things to keep in mind while TAing. For people who are interested in reaching out to one of the boot camps and maybe going out there and TAing, what are some of the upsides or the benefits? How do you feel? Do you ever get a good feeling of satisfaction? Or
yeah, I mean, it's really satisfying to know that you're helping them. And often, you know, at the end, they'll tell me, oh, thanks so much for all of the work that you did. I don't know if they know that I get paid to do it.
Just doing my job.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the things that I really like, I don't know if you found this or feel the same, but like Jason Tam, for example, is just building that relationship, being able to go through what I would consider a really pivotal moment or a life-changing experience with someone and being there part of that way, and then seeing them a year later or 2 years later, and they're actually quite successful doing it. It's a great feeling, and you've contributed to the community.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I totally agree.
Nice. Awesome. So tell us a little bit about the upcoming, it's this Tuesday, the Van Ruby Lightning Talks.
Yeah, so this is an event that we have been trying to do more than once a year, but the last few years, I guess it's just been once a year. You know,
I thought it was supposed to be quarterly.
It's not quarterly. I think it would be difficult for us to get a full house of talks every single quarter from people around town.
Right.
It's already. I'm actually finding it hard enough to get just people who work in Ruby to come out sometimes.
Have you thought about bringing people in from other cities?
We've done that in the past. I think one time 2 years ago we brought in Aaron Patterson from Seattle. Don't remember. I mean, there are several people that mostly, I mean, it's all Calv, but Calv bringing people from out of town.
Sounds pretty cool.
The Lightning Talks, though, so there's a difference between like having a night where we have talks going on and then the Lightning Talks, right? Like we try to do the talks at least once a quarter.
I see.
Like once every two and a half months or something like that.
So what's the difference between talks and Lightning Talks?
Right. Yeah. So Lightning Talks is what you would expect. You go up and you give a 1 to 5 minute talk about more or less anything you want. We prefer if it's Ruby related, obviously. But you know, if you want to talk about JavaScript or you want to talk about programming in general, you can do that. But we're pretty hard with the 5 minute cap.
Can you name some of the talks that happened maybe last year or last event? Something that someone could maybe look forward to?
I learned about Docker for the first time. Caleb gave a really awesome presentation with a whale that going across the screen.
That was hilarious.
It was.
I mean, like last year I talked about a gem that I had written. Philippe, a guy that I work with, he talked about what it was like to be a programmer and not be a robot. Yeah. Some other talks about using Postgres, like views for like SQL views,
mm-hmm.
In Postgres, and how you would use them in your Rails app and stuff like that.
I've seen people use, I think, productivity with Tmux was one example I saw somewhere.
Right. Yeah. I think that was actually Chuck.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So most of the talks are usually quick little tidbits. You can't really get deep into anything. Mm-hmm. But it's fun because, you know, there's people are frequently, like the pace is changing very quickly, right?
Yeah, it's usually quite a happening time of year and big meetup. I think it was 2 years ago this month that I first learned about Docker. And was pretty cool. I had no idea what he was talking about, to be honest. I just didn't get the concept. Little did I know I'd be using Docker every single day now, you know, and pretty much since then.
Right.
But it's really cool.
So how'd you go from high school teacher to like coder?
Oh man. So my roommate in university was Brent Vatney, who actually...
he's doing a lightning talk, or he's doing a talk this week.
Is he?
Yeah, he's doing the React Native.
Oh
talk
yeah,
on Friday.
Oh, okay.
Lunch and learn.
Yeah, lunch and learn. Oh, I see. That's right. Yeah. So Brent's a interesting guy. he's on the React team now.
Core contributor to React, and I think
he's
Exponent
part of the
JS?
React. He's working for Exponent JS,
mm-hmm.
and he's on the React JS team. He also
pretty cool.
on the React Native team. Yeah.
So he's internet celebrity.
I mean, just by chance, I was placed on the same floor as him while we were both at SFU and just became friends. And then a couple years later, we moved in together and we lived together for like 3 years. But he really tried to push me to get me to do more programming because I had done a little bit. My undergrad is in physics. So I did a little bit. I worked in a lab and did some Python, Fortran.
Fortran? Wow.
Yeah.
So that was like scientific programming, right?
Yeah. It was just like data processing.
Yeah.
And he tried to get me to get into it a little bit more. And I kind of brushed him off because he's a really pushy guy. So I didn't do it for a while, but then I did my education degree. And I will say that aside from the practicum teaching, the entire degree is a joke.
Oh, no.
It is so easy, especially coming from such a rigorous, you know, like undergraduate degree and then going and doing that.
Right.
What
is it, a year long?
It's a year long thing, and it was so easy. Like, I can't emphasize it enough. It was a joke. And so I had so much free time at home, and I actually thought that I would take up programming because it would make me more marketable as a teacher. Because I knew that a lot of people had a hard time getting jobs as teachers. They still do. A lot of people I graduated with still do not have full-time jobs.
Right.
They work part-time or they work as subs. And here we are. This is like...
It's quite a different story from the programming community and tech jobs.
How's that?
Everybody has jobs.
It's
and
like hard,
in fact,
it's hard to be unemployed.
I see what you mean.
You're like, oh, I get I get job offers. Like, I get emails from like Europe. Stuff saying, like, come here, please.
I probably get two to three recruiters, or sometimes just directly from the CTOs from companies on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, per
week.
Where these teachers are like, got any jobs?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately. The thing is that it seems like for some of these schools, so I don't mean to criticize UBC, but their education program just seems like a huge money grab to me. Because there are no teaching jobs in this province, and they accept like 300 people per year into this teaching program. And it's just ludicrous to give every one of those people a degree. Like, I can understand if you accept those people, but at least make it hard so that, you know, most of these people drop out.
It seems to me that a lot of the bigger organizations in general in life are more bureaucratic, take longer to change. And as a result, a lot of these... sort of constructs that they put around licensing or You know, here's a package. This is a full course. Are becoming greatly outdated, and I think we see in the software development community. You can tell me your opinion on it, but we see really interesting things happening with small teams, you know, agile practices, reiterating on ideas quite quickly and going through change quite quickly. And that's just starting, it seems, to trickle back into some of the other places. I think boot camps are showing that this is the education system has been outdated for a while. What do you think?
Well, I guess, you know, there's definitely something to be said about going and getting a 4-year computer science degree.
Right.
And spending that much time with a computer and understanding that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, because I think you come out of an 8-week boot camp, your options are still pretty limited, mm-hmm. right? Like this is funny that we're talking about this, because I kind of feel like the situation that lots of teachers are in right now is not unlike the situation that most Code Core graduates or other, coming from other boot camps are in. You know, it's not all, rainbows and daisies. A lot of them have a really hard time finding a job. And if they do find a job, they run into the risk of being unemployed, I think, within the next 5 years, because, you know, they get that job and then it's not a passion for them, so they don't spend their evenings and their weekends learning and improving.
That's a really interesting point that you bring up about it's not a passion for them. I found something that I think is pretty interesting. We can look at some great outliers there, like Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg, for example, who've done very well in successfully programming. It was clearly a passion for them, something they did. They would wake up, you know, in the middle of the night or, sure. you know, sleep 2 hours a day so right. they could spend time programming.
Yeah.
And they became really successful. They also had probably a bit of luck, but really hard work and something they really dedicated themselves to. I would always recommend to people that are going to or considering going to boot camps to have spent some time struggling with this stuff before going in. Don't just jump in to a development boot camp knowing nothing about it. I personally also went through one, but I also have a diploma in computing science, and I also spent probably about a year, almost 2 years, working in tech support and teaching myself PHP and going through, you know, several textbooks, and got to the point where I was actually a little better, I think, than I gave myself credit for, but I still didn't feel that I really grokked the concepts. Like even MVC, I'd heard of it, but I didn't really get what that meant. And going through the boot camp helped to really solidify those concepts for me. But you're right. If it's maybe people who are just thinking, you know, this is gonna make me money.
Right. That's the thing.
It's not accounting. Like that's one thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've met a lot of students who come in with that attitude.
Right.
It's like, how can I make money? Or they have a business idea before they even start the boot camp, which mm-hmm. is fine. Like, I mean, you know, you need to have those. If you need to have those skills to be able to launch your business,
right.
then fine, you know. But to come in with the idea that you're going to be making $100,000, you know, right out of the gate, I think it's a rude awakening.
It's not very realistic yeah. in Vancouver.
I think one of the other things that people do is they say, like, oh, I'm a computer person, like, quote unquote. Oh, I've been using computers, quote unquote, since I was a little kid. But it's like, you've been using them, but like, we're talking about building programs. That's completely different than using a program. There's a whole different mindset there.
It's same 2015, with designing. Using computers isn't a skill anymore.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Yeah. It's, I think people come there with like, oh, I'm good at computers. I can, you know, like I download torrents all the time, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, it's not the same. Like understanding all this stuff about programming and understanding even just simple things like how to store a value could be really complicated.
Right. My mom downloads torrents.
Yeah. So
there we go.
Yeah. My grandma uses Skype. It's like, it's not that crazy to be that computer literate anymore.
So Gabe, you're kind of, not kind of, you're quite the JavaScript person, and it seems like whenever I see you, you're always plugging away on something and, you know, digging into this, or I'm trying to figure this out, or this new framework, or, you know what, I'm writing my own framework. Tell us a little bit about what you've been working on that's cool in JavaScript.
Okay. I've been working on this library called Yoke.js with the sponsorship of my wonderful employer. And the idea is sort of that I wanted to be very, very, a very simple layer on top of RxJS. And should I talk about RxJS?
Yep, sure. Yeah.
Okay, so our RxJS is an implementation of the observer pattern in JavaScript, and it allows you to write I guess, in a reactive programming style. So you can create an observable, which is sort of like a promise. Mm-hmm. It's a wrapper around a value, except that a promise can only ever receive a single value, whereas an observable can receive many values. So if you wrapped it around a WebSocket, mm-hmm. With a promise, you know, you'd only ever be able to resolve the first value that you received from that WebSocket. With an observable, you can resolve all of the values as they come in. So this allows you to sort of pass around the WebSocket as if it were sort of like a promise, but then you can hook it up in different places. Then you can compose these observables together in order to create very cool experiences for the user. So what it really does is it helps to wrangle the control flow in your application. And like JavaScript is crazy, right? It's an asynchronous language, so you have asynchronous behavior all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so by wrapping your asynchronous behavior in observables, you sort of get rid of the async in your app. So what Yoke.js does is it takes sort of a similar concept to React, where React just returns some JSX. It's like virtual DOM, right?
Right.
And then you can take these. So you have a function that returns some JSX, and you can put that into your page, just like you do with React. Except that Yoke will, like with React, you have, I guess, plain values, right, that you can escape into your JSX. Well, with Yoke, you can put an observable into your JSX. You can escape the observable. And then the components themselves will recognize that, hey, this value is an observable. And so I'm just going to subscribe to that observable, or like when it resolves a new value, I'm going to re-render myself.
Oh, I think I understand. So the previous way, or the React way, is that your changes are sort of singular, whereas this observable, you can just pass on a giant thing that says, these are all the things that I can do, and your component can take that in.
Well, so React will only, inside of your JSX template, you can only put plain values
right
in there. If you wanted to use RxJS with React, you need to explicitly unwrap the observable by subscribing to it and saying, when this value comes in, I want to call setState.
Okay.
Right, as you do in React. With Yoke, you just say, okay, here's the observable. Let's say this observable is like a counter, right? I'm going to just take that observable and I'm going to place it directly in my template. Or I'm going to wrap, an H1 around
right
that. And so the H1, or the Yoke equivalent of an H1, will say, oh, okay, this is an observable. I need to watch for changes on that. And whenever that count receives a new value, then the H1 will re-render itself and put a 2 or a 3.
You can have many properties on this observable, and your component can actually digest all of those properties at once versus having to do them individually?
So an observable is a wrapper, I guess, around like a single value, but a component could listen to multiple observables at the same time. Yeah.
Okay.
So are you working on this project alone?
Mostly, yeah. Yeah.
Is it open source?
It is open source.
I saw it had quite a few stars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's doing pretty well lately.
Yeah.
It's at github.com/garbles, which is my username, /yoke.
Garbles/yoke.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'll make sure to check it out. One of the things we were it got mentioned at work the other day, was that a lot of open source suffers from lack of good documentation. We all had a bit of a laugh and then said, ha ha ha, so does every bit of code usually.
Right.
What about the Yoke.js repo? Is there good info there? Do you accept pull requests? If I wanted to take a look at it, would I be able to figure it out?
Is it tabs or spaces?
Yeah. I mean, the documentation is all right. I am using a pretty strict ESLint configuration. Mm-hmm. So if you submit a pull request and it's not in the exact style that ESLint wants, it will fail the test suite.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Got to be really strict about that. I guess I am definitely open to pull requests.
Okay.
I haven't received too many. I think I might be being too strict, because some people get turned off when I ask them to just make a simple change to their pull request. they seem to like, oh, come on, man, just merge it in. And it's,
yeah.
No, I'm not.
Or gonna. Like, you fix it for me.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's your change. You fix it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that sounds completely reasonable, and yeah. I wish more people would be more strict with their repos and the code that they let in sometimes.
So how do you use Yoke at Brewhouse?
Just using it in a side project right now. We're definitely considering the potential of using it on client projects, but it's been very successful for us. I just like an internal thing. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Brewhouse started a program, I think, a while ago to bring on interns, something yep. like that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. This was probably, I guess, about 4 months ago now. We decided that we wanted to try and help with the, you know, we felt that in Vancouver, it's really hard for a lot of these bootcamp grads to get a job, as we previously talked about. Mm-hmm. And we sort of, we thought, you know, it's better for a student to get a job. If we can offer guidance for them, it's better for them to get a job with us, and we can mentor them, build good habits with them. And then perhaps it would enable them to go out and get a job somewhere else if we decided not to keep them. And the idea was mostly around training. And we have a lot of people there. I guess I sort of jump-started this, but we have just about, well, we have 100% buy-in from everyone else. Everyone wants to help and wants to, you know, teach. Everyone gets enjoyment from teaching.
That sounds pretty interesting, and it sounds a lot different from a lot of other places that, you know, fresh bootcamp grads might go to. What would be some of the benefits to the grad to do that?
To go
and work do an internship at Brewhouse.
Oh, man, it would be awesome. Mm-hmm. actually, I remember before we even hired our first apprentice, we had some of our clients who are, you know, looking for a developer and can't seem to find one, asking if they could have the apprentice after we were done with them.
So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
That was really good. So like we knew that this person would be able to find work afterwards.
Wow,
and still,
cool.
You know, we could offer some sort of mentorship.
Right. I think everybody that heard about it was excited.
Really?
I think so.
There were some people that weren't very excited about it.
I almost quit my job and applied myself.
Yeah.
No. What I mean is there were some people who gave us a really hard time.
Just the whole like intern. Like,
there's always going to be naysayers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Haters
going to hate.
Yeah.
Well, it seemed like a disproportionate amount, actually. But
tell us a little bit about that. What sort of feedback did you get?
There? Yeah. There was a lot of like, this is a race to the bottom. You guys are exploiting this person, whoever you hire, because, you know, in fairness, we weren't paying very much because we were assuming quite a bit of risk, right, by bringing this person on. Mm-hmm. Because we're a company. We're only a company of 7 people. And like, had we not hired, like, so we actually ended up hiring the apprentice.
Right.
If we did not, we'd only be a company of 6 mm-hmm. right now, right?
On the same apprenticeship salary?
What do you mean?
Like, he went from an apprentice probably to just an entry-level programmer.
Oh, no, we give him a real salary now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because after a couple months, we figured, like, he's doing a much better job than we thought he would do. And so we need to give him a good salary.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that there's a pretty common misconception, and I think even you buy into it a little bit, that somebody can't learn how to develop in 8 weeks and that people go through a developer boot camp from zero to, within the 8 weeks. I honestly don't know any people who have done that, and I don't think I've ever seen it.
What's
the people that I've seen go through boot camps, oftentimes they'll have something like an engineering degree or they've done something.
Oh, I
It's a supplementary thing.
They know it. They know some HTML. They've played around with databases. They've been in and around it. They have some ideas. They've struggled a little bit with it. They have some sort of concepts and they come in and they do pretty well. Sometimes, you know, we have people go through sometimes that have, you know, 20 years development experience.
Right.
So you think that zero to hero thing is a myth? That whole like, I knew nothing, and absolutely. I came out knowing everything. But yeah, that just doesn't happen, I don't think.
That's the problem, is that a lot of them think that that's what's happened to them, right?
Well, I mean, I think some of the fault is like, I mean, I've never seen it with the companies here in town, but some of the marketing, like, they make that, assumption. But I don't think, I haven't seen any misleading stuff here. I think most people are pretty fair because they know they're being realistic. And they also know if I hire someone that's a zero, that's, you know, I don't mean a negative way, a zero, has no experience, that's going to make their employment rate suffer. Yeah. So the school's marketing is based on how well they can place students into jobs. So hiring these people that know nothing and bringing them to hero status is very difficult, and they know that. They hire people that they know can be employed after. It helps their numbers. It helps their, helps the school's, authority or whatever.
Yep.
So it's all about how you think about it. But most people are pretty transparent, I think, about that.
Agree. On another note, going off what you guys were saying, is that I think, so we wanted to offer a position to help them build good habits.
Right.
Right. And that was that's actually a really big thing, because I see a lot of students who graduate and then they get the job as a CTO of this startup, where they're the only developer.
I've seen that as well. Yeah.
It happens a lot. And because, I mean, it's so hard to find developers, you can, like, this person is just dying to get a job. Yeah. So, like, why not, right? But that, when you don't have any mentorship, you're going to create bad habits, or you're going to, for a year or two, you're not going to realize that you've been doing this all wrong.
Yeah.
Right. I remember my first job and just getting raked over the coals constantly for the first 6 months and just feeling awful. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I became so much better as a developer because I, went through that.
Internships are awesome. Even these low paying ones, they're great. Just don't do it forever. It's not a forever job.
A couple of places in the States that are quite big, I think, in the Ruby community, ThoughtBot. I think Pivotal, and I totally forget, drawing a blank here, HashRocket. They're known as pretty awesome shops in the Rails community. They have open source projects. They're pretty big there. So HashRocket, they do apprenticeships and they hire people, and they do 100% pair programming, and it really looks like a great opportunity to train. And I don't know what their apprenticeships pay, but it's not the same as a regular developer. And that was something that I was quite interested in coming out of the boot camp, and I had a conversation with them, and until we realized that I wasn't American and would have needed sponsorship, then everything was going great. So I was actually quite interested in Brewhouse. So on that note, is Brewhouse hiring?
Is Brewhouse hiring? I think we are, actually. I think we're definitely open to hiring another developer.
So, I mean, we talked about Brewhouse a little bit. We didn't really talk about what Brewhouse was.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so we're a software agency in town. We build mostly Ruby on Rails apps. Recently, we just did a Phoenix app.
GoodBits.
Ooh.
We work on GoodBits. GoodBits is a tool for email mailing lists, I guess. So if you've ever, if you subscribe to something like Ruby Weekly or JavaScript Weekly, these sort of weekly mailing lists that are just a curation of the best stuff over the past week, we make that really easy to do. Not that these two mailing lists use GoodBits, but they could. Probably should. should.
Yeah.
And the idea is that we give you a little browser plugin, and you click on that when you come across a link that you really like, and it automatically adds it to the app. So that you can just log in and there it is, and then you can drag it into your newsletter and then send your newsletter away. It makes it super simple. You don't have to keep track of what articles were awesome, or put them in a Google Doc. Or,
yeah,
I don't. I as I understand, that was like the common
Ice
way
pocket.
To do it.
Yeah.
Pocket.
Yeah.
Well, this is before we started GoodBits.
Is there a React.js newsletter?
There is a React.js newsletter, and it's run by Brent.
Oh, really? Do you know what they use?
Actually, no. Brent runs the React Native newsletter.
Oh, right.
I'm so sorry.
Does that use GoodBits?
That uses GoodBits.
Nice.
100%.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I don't know what the React Native or React.js newsletter uses.
So are you giving a talk at the Lightning Talks?
Yes.
What's it on?
It's on why I hate mix-ins.
Why you hate mix-ins?
Yeah.
That'll be good to hear. So that's coming up on Tuesday.
That's on Tuesday, yeah.
What time?
6:30. At CodeCore.
See you there, Gabe.
Okay, thanks.
If people want to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you?
Get ready for the spam.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of listeners.
I'll tell you what. A really good place, I think, and where I like to reach out to you when I want to talk to you,
Slack.
And where I think people can reach out to me as well, is the YVR Dev Slack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's you could reach out to me there if you wanted to. There's we have a Slack invite system.
Right.
Like, so if you go to yvrdev.herokuapp.com. Yeah.
And what's your handle there?
Gabe.
Mine's Drew. And
mine's James.
Wow. Hey, not bad.
Creative. I'm surprised I got James because there was a couple hundred people in there. And I'm surprised there was no
right.
Jameses yet.
Yeah.
Everyone's using these lead usernames.
Yeah, it's not. Okay, Gabe Schultz, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Vancouver Tech Podcasts.
Find us on iTunes and subscribe to our RSS feed at vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
If you want to reach out to us directly, we're usually online in the Slack channel somewhere on yvrdev.slack.com.
If you need an invite to YVR Dev Slack, you can get one at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
You can email us at show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca. See you there.
Bye.